From the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. Coming up in this half hour, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Dan Zwicker. He's at ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. And Don Day will be here to take up the agricultural weather forecast. Along the way, we'll hear an update of the MF Global demise from Chicago. Randall Gordon of the National Grain and Feed Association will join your Director of Agricultural Programming, Dave Dickey. And it all happens right here on this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media and the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report on Illinois Public Media is made possible with support from L&M Commodities, a full-service brokerage company serving area farmers with professional market advice and crop insurance products. L&M Commodities has offices in New Market, Indiana, Leland, Illinois, and Terrell, Arkansas.
Here's what the weather forecast looks like for this afternoon for the Urbana-Champaign area. Partly sunny skies, a high of 41 degrees, breezy with a west-northwest wind at about 16 to 20 miles an hour. That'll gust all the way to 30 tonight. Partly cloudy, a low of 26. A west wind between 7 and 14, gusting to 17. And then on Veterans Day tomorrow, mostly sunny, a high of 52 degrees. South-southwest winds at 8 to 18 miles an hour, gusting to 26. On Friday night, mostly clear, a low of 38 degrees. Winds out of the west again at 10 to 15. They'll gust to 20. And then Saturday, mostly sunny, a high of 58. Breezy, a south-southwest wind at 10 to 13. Saturday night, mostly cloudy and breezy, a low of just about 50 degrees. On Sunday, a 30% chance of showers, mostly cloudy and breezy, a high of 63. Sunday night, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy and low of 49. And on Monday, a chance of showers, mostly cloudy, a high near 61 degrees. Monday night, showers again, mostly cloudy and 46. Tuesday, showers, partly sunny, a high near 58 degrees. Tuesday night, partly cloudy and a low of 38. And by the time we get to Wednesday of next week, mostly sunny skies, a high near 50 degrees.
Support comes from Stuart Peterson, since 1985 offering strategic commodity consulting and marketing services to help producers manage market opportunities and risks. Stuart Peterson develops strategies customized to each client's goals and operation size. More information at stuart-peterson.com.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media and the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
Support for today's broadcast comes from ADM, now providing a new mobile site, FarmerView, for up-to-date futures, weather, market commentary, and local bids.
Here's the way prices settled in Chicago on this Thursday afternoon. December wheat futures finished with the nearby contract at $6.20, down 23 for the soft red. The July at 680 and three quarters, down 14 and three quarters. December corn futures 645 and a half, 10 and a half lower. The March down 10 and a quarter at 654 and three quarters. And May corn 661 and three quarters, down a dime. July futures 663 and a half, 10 and a half lower in December of next year at $5.82.5, down 14 cents on the afternoon. November beans for the day, $11.58, down 17 and three quarters. January at $11.67.5, 18 cents lower. The March at $11.77 and a quarter, down 18 and a quarter. And the May, $11.87, down 18 and a quarter as well. July soybeans, $11.96.5, down 18. And next year's November at $11.85 and three quarters, down 18 and three quarters. December bean meal futures at $2.97.90, down $5.20 on the afternoon. Live cattle futures finished the nearby contract with the December's at $1.21.60, down a dollar for the day. February at $1.23.65, 80 cents lower. November feeders at $1.42.07.5, up 52.5 cents. December lean hogs on the day at $85.75, finished 60 cents higher on the day. The outside markets for the afternoon finished like this. The nearby crude oil futures, $97.74 a barrel, up $2. Ethanol at 263.7, that's a penny and 4 cents lower. Natural gas at 364.9, down 0.3 of a cent. Heating oil or diesel fuel at $3.15 even, up 5 2/10 of a cent. And gold futures for the day, $1,758.90 an ounce, down $32 on the afternoon. The Dow Jones Industrial Average just about 114 points higher at this hour at 11,895, and the dollar at 77.72, down 0.20 for the day. Support comes from the Farm Doc Project at the University of Illinois, holding a series of five Illinois Farm Economic Summit meetings December 12th through the 16th to discuss and analyze the most pressing economic issues facing Illinois producers. Registration and details on their website, farmdoc.illinois.edu.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason, coming to you today from the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City. Dan Zwicker from ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois, is on the phone line to take up the marketplace. Dan, thanks for taking time with us. Just so everybody knows, we're recording just a bit early, so this one's not live. It's about 11 a.m. at the time of this recording. Can you go through, Dan, the numbers from USDA and your perspective on them as they came out yesterday morning?
Well, for the most part, USDA didn't give us any major shockers. They did bring down the corn yield from 48.1 down to 146.7. I think that was, for the most part, generally expected, but probably not everybody thought it was going to happen. But that ended up bringing down production 123 million bushels, rather than take it all the way through to the carryout and drop and carryout down 123. USDA used 100 of that decline to drop the feed, seed, and residual use down to 4.6 billion bushels. Now, some in the trade kind of feel somewhat skeptical whether or not that number is going to fall down that low. So for the most part, I think the trade kind of viewed the number as generally positive, but it wasn't shockingly bullish. And without a shockingly bullish report at this time of year, it's kind of hard to get any kind of upside enthusiasm in the market. They left exports unchanged at 1.6 billion. And this week's weekly export sales number, we only sold about 10 million. So we are very, very weak, I think, on the export front. They left the ethanol grind unchanged, which is understandably the way the ethanol margins are very strong, and about every plant's going is going full blast. So that is the big bright spot in the corn market. But even when it's all said and done, 843 million bushel carryout is still very tight, and it may still require some form of rationing unless this demand curve really falls off the cliff due to worries in Europe and kind of a world recession type thing. That's kind of what I think is probably more so in the marketplace today than any time before, as we did see the dollar rally sharply yesterday. It broke out of a bullish flag formation, and I think that has the world worried about world recessionary problems due to the fall of the Eurozone, with Italy now on the front burner, and I understand that Spain is next. So there may be some major restructuring going on in the Eurozone before it's all over with. But for the supply-demand table on corn, you have to be generally positive, but not real bullish. And at this time of year, you have to kind of be kind of bullish to get an upside shot to the market.
I would think it makes your job fairly difficult to try to read a fundamental marketplace, even the technical side of the marketplace for corn, when you have the outside markets so influential at this point?
Well, it does, but actually corn is somewhat, I mean, with the weakness that we saw yesterday and now we're seeing some weakness here today, is very seasonally correct to see corn futures slide off during the past couple weeks in November. Very often the market slides down into a late November, early December low to kind of check out the support level of an early October harvest low. And then the seasonal tendencies really begin to move to the upside anytime after December 1st. So while I think price action kind of implies that the seasonal low in corn is in place with that early October low, it's not uncommon for the market to drift lower during the last couple weeks of November and check out that low for support, and then the seasonals then kick to the upside as we begin the month of November.
You were a bit more friendly to the market last week than you had been for quite some time. Do you remain in that stance?
I think I have to on the corn. I think corn is still a very tight situation. The market kind of tells you that USDA still may not have the ending stocks number correct, that we did not carry in as the ending stocks level that USDA implies we carried in. You know, they kind of imply that we brought in 1.1 billion bushels. I think that's probably on the high side. And I think the small crops keep getting smaller. So I think as you look down the road, we're going to see some further downward adjustments in production. But the big concern we have here is the phone from world buyers is not being ringing to buy some inventory, and I think that's what's really hurting the market. I think chart wise, corn is still in a sideways pattern. It's been in for the past 4 or 5 weeks. It did look like earlier this week we were breaking to the upside. Now we've kind of fallen back into the that trading range here today, being down some yesterday, and we're down roughly another 7 here today as I speak. So we're still in that 650 range on December corn. It kind of wants to hang around that level, and until something comes along to change that, that's probably where we're going to hang around at.
USDA has put ending stocks at 843. You think that might be a little rich at this point? At least that's what you've said. Originally, that number was down as low as, I think, 650 million bushels. You think that's closer?
Well, no. Well, I think you and I have had discussion before. I don't think you can get down that low. I think that's just not, and I think that's the problem that USDA is having. Counting bushels, with the growth of the ethanol industry, corn processing industry that we've seen over the past 5 to 6 years, I think we're using corn faster than USDA can count it, and I think that is why they are having problems, because you just can't imagine the number of trucks, rail cars, that we have corn in them moving to that processing point to be ground for ethanol. So I think they're having problems with that. And, you know, when we're using roughly 1.1 to 1.2 billion bushels of inventory a month, I don't think you can get down to 600 or 700. I think maybe, you know, from an academia point of view, you might be able to point that, but I think you got to keep in mind that these end users have a week or two inventory in the pipeline at their individual location, and I just don't see how bare bones inventory, at least at the moment, is in the billion bushel range. And if you get down underneath that, and I think we were this year, then you have a real vacuum. And I think that is what explains why we have such strong basis levels here at harvest and continue to. And I think we just haven't got that pipeline back up to where it really needs to be for the basis levels to soften up.
Is it okay for the marketplace, not okay for U.S. farmers, but okay for the marketplace, that Japan has imported corn from Ukraine? I mean, does that help the market manage its way through a short supply out of the United States?
Well, what it does is it says is that world corn production is growing. When the Ukraine has got a lot of growth to go, And we're going to have increasing competition from Europe, clear across the board. I mean, we see that as a global company, and that is going to put some pressure on U.S. On demand for U.S. Exports as these developing countries begin to expand their agricultural production. Now, I think they got a long ways to go yet. I don't think that, but I think longer term, we saw what the impact of the growth of the South American production in soybeans has done over the years. I think you're going to see big growth as you move into Europe. There's going to be a lot of growth food production in Europe, and we're going to need that as the world population wants to have better diets. So corn prices ain't going to fall down just because Ukraine is maybe exporting a little corn in Japan. The demand curve for food is definitely on the upswing, and I think it's going to stay that way for several years.
Are you of the opinion that even if the Eurozone, Europe, were to fall into a recession, not a depression, but a recession, that there is enough taste for the types of products, red meats, other products that come from primary row crops, corn, soybean, and wheat, that it will continue to drive the need to produce those crops at very high levels?
Well, who knows? And depends upon how serious it gets. My guess is the Eurozone is going to have a lot of problems. I think they're already kind of talking about splitting it up. How they do that, I don't know. It kind of looks like maybe Germany and France will be the main holders of the euro, and then maybe they'll let the southern European countries that are having problems go back to their old currencies with some form of exchange rate something. But I do know that these countries that are highly in debt, they need to inflate. They can't be restricted to something else. Now, who wants to own their currency? I don't know. I wouldn't want to invest in a country that's going to inflate. But we live in a country that's inflating. I mean, that's the advantage of having your own currency, that you can continue to print money. And my guess is before it's all said and done, the Eurozone is going to print a whole bunch of euros. And then the United States is going to have to counter with that by printing them more dollars. That, I think, is where your commodity bulls basically make their case, is that politicians at the end of the day can't make the cut no matter which flavor they are. And it's easier just to expand the money supply and try to get out of office with your scalp on.
Dan, thanks so much. We appreciate you being with us.
Very well.
Dan Zwicker is with ADM Grain Group in Decatur, Illinois. You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a production of Illinois Public Media. That's public radio for the farming world. Do visit us on our website at willag.org. That's willag.org. On your smartphone at M, that stands for mobile, m.willag.org. Or you can always just dial this number, 217-333-3434. It's updated at 10:15 and 3:15 today. That will not happen at 3:15 this afternoon, but the 10:15 report is there. It's all part of the Agricultural Service from Illinois Public Media.
Support for the Closing Market Report comes from AgriGold Hybrids, featuring the AgriGold Giants, a group of five new hybrids designed to meet the performance standards of yield, health, and consistency required by Midwestern corn growers. More information is at AgriGoldGiants.com or at 800-262-7333.
Up next, the bankruptcy of MF Global has sent shockwaves, as you probably already know, through the agricultural marketing and storage facility world. Illinois Public Media's agricultural director, Dave Dickey, today spoke with Randall Gordon, Vice President for Communication and Government Relations of the National Grain and Feed Association, about the demise of MF Global.
From the National Grain and Feed Association standpoint, do you feel there's enough checks and balances in place with what the CFTC does as it relates to what happened at MF Global?
I think, Dave, that is an open question right now, and frankly it will require probably some congressional hearings and everything else before that's determined. There are some, not us, but there are some who allege that the CFTC has been so busy implementing Dodd-Frank, the financial regulatory reform law, and writing new regulations that they may have taken their eye off the ball on MF Global. But it's a different division of CFTC that's been working on that, so I don't know how much credence to put in that. The enforcement division has still been fairly active as well. But I think that will come out as the investigations continue, and certainly the CFTC is going to be held accountable for its oversight or lack thereof if that is determined to be the case. From our member standpoint, one of the biggest issues, and we represent grain elevators who obviously do a lot of hedging through different kinds of funds, and with MF Global being one of those, is to try and unwind the cash accounts that they held or the margining money and get that back in their hands as quickly as possible. And we think on the margining fund aspect, that's occurring right now at a fairly decent rate, although more needs to be done. But there's a lot of lack of information right now, and that's been one of the challenges that we've all been trying to grapple with.
Have you been able to ascertain how the MF Global situation will affect elevators longer term?
Well, I think, again, if we can get particularly the margining money back that they had deposited through MF Global for their hedge accounts, get that back in their possession, that will be a big help, because otherwise it's going to constrain their cash resources to do future hedging of their as a risk management tool. And that, of course, affects farmers directly. The CME group is trying to get at least 75% of the funds back and holding on to the other 25% at least for the short term until they get it ascertained from the bankruptcy trustee in their own audits whether the customer accounts were segregated sufficiently at MF Global. And you know all the questions surrounding that right now as to what happened to some of those customer accounts still being calibrated. But I think if that aspect of it can continue to proceed pretty well, and our indication is that some elevators have 75% already, some are in that 40 to 60% range, but CME worked pretty hard over the weekend to try and identify and verify that accounts were accurate and trying to get that process going.
What are lessons learned from this?
Very good question. I think one may be that they're in this kind of a situation, there may need to be more oversight than maybe what otherwise occurred. A lot of the facts have still got to come out. CME Group has indicated that they did audits of MF Global, at least in the ag space, and found that they were over-collateralized on their accounts. But now they're trying to reconfirm that that is, in fact, the case. So the exchange may well have done its job in monitoring that situation. But it just shows, how the kind of ripple effects that can occur if one entity like that has financial trouble. But it's quite obviously they were putting bets on European securities and European debt that Mr. Corzine thought was a good move, and certainly didn't turn out to be very wise.
Randall Gordon is with the National Grain and Feed Association. He spoke today with IPM Agricultural Director Dave Dickey. I'm University of Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. This is the Closing Market Report. We'll say goodbye to some of our radio stations now. For the rest of you, stay with us. We'll be back in 2 minutes with Don Day and the Agricultural Weather Forecast.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Farm Credit Services of Illinois. Farm Credit Services of Illinois has been providing for farmers' credit and insurance needs for over 95 years, including real estate, operating and machinery loans, crop and life insurance protection, and programs for young and beginning farmers.
It's National Vanilla Cupcake Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1683, Robert Morrison died. A Scottish botanist, his work helped lead to the modern system of plant classification. In 1793, Jared Kitland was born. A physician, naturalist, botanist, and teacher, he is credited with developing 26 varieties of cherries and 6 varieties of pears. In 1871, journalist Henry Morton Stanley found missing explorer Dr. David Livingston. Dr. Livingston, I presume. Livingston was in Africa in the hopes of ending the slave trade to the eastern coast of the U.S. and to discover the source of the Nile River. In 1951, as of this day in history, you could call from North Carolina and buy tractor parts at a dealer in California without operator assistance. Coast-to-coast direct dialing began. The very first call went from Englewood, New Jersey to Alameda, California. They were able to talk just 18 seconds after the dialing. Previously, coast-to-coast calls were replaced by long-distance operators. And in 1983, computer viruses became a reality. Fred Cohen created the first documented computer virus while studying for a PhD at the University of Southern California. Cohen hid his virus inside a graphics program called VD, written for a VAX minicomputer. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report. It is a Thursday afternoon. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason. In studio with us here at the National Association of Farm Broadcasting Convention in Kansas City, Don Day of Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming. You're a long way from home. Thanks for making the trip to Kansas City.
Good to be here. It's a beautiful day, actually, out there.
It is a gorgeous day out there. Will we have good weather across the Midwest?
Some good news, yeah. For folks looking for a break in the weather, we've got one. It's going to be, as it should be this time of year, a little bit on the chilly side. But the precipitation chances are going to be pretty low until we get into early next week. And it looks like the areas that don't want the rain probably are going to have the best chances. That's Ohio, those areas in the eastern Corn Belt got some chances for showers right around Monday, Tuesday of next week. Western central areas of the Corn Belt look to be on the dry side. Cool, but temperatures really not that far from normal.
I had a conversation with some folks from Kansas, asked them how they were doing precipitation-wise, and Oklahoma as well, because they've been very dry. They had a really big rainfall in the last week, a 3-inch rainfall in some portions of those two state areas. Are they about to end portion of that drought?
Well, they're going to get some more help here. The way the pattern's evolving, there's going to be more systems moving through. They're going to be quick movers. Whether or not they're going to be able to produce as much precipitation as the last couple, probably not. However, I do think they're going to get a little bit of a break this winter with better precipitation, certainly not as bad as what they experienced over the summer. Big question's going to be getting out of the winter and spring if they're going to go back into the hot dry that we had last year. And unfortunately, the odds are fairly good that that may happen again to some extent. But at least for the winter season, it looks like it is going to be a little more moist in those areas.
What is it about the way the climate's set up that suggests to you that the odds are going to stay to the dry end for them?
La Nina. When you have a La Nina, when the Pacific water temperatures are a little cooler than normal, causes a very fast-moving jet stream. And that fast-moving jet stream tends to whip systems through. And that area east of the Rockies, you've got to get storms to slow down, to draw in moisture, to be able to produce the bigger rains. And when La Nina is in place, these systems move through quickly. So it's very hard for those southern plain states to get those slower-moving storm systems. We had a very strong La Nina this past season. This La Nina is not as strong. So odds would say that, yes, we're going to trend drier again heading into the summer season, but maybe not to the extent of last year.
And this is truly a different event, an opposite event, than what we have talked about for the last decade, which are El Niños as opposed to La Niños.
Yeah, just to make it confusing, lots of L's and La's and not A's and O's, but it is the opposite. And what tends to happen, what we've observed in the past, is that these go through cycles. You usually have La Niñas that can go anywhere from 2 or 3 years, usually. Sometimes they go longer than that. And then we start to go back to what we call neutral, which is the water temperature in the Pacific sort of settle down, and then it goes into the warmer phase, or El Niño. So usually when we hit patterns like this, they go through 3 or 5 year cycles. And so you expect to have periods of dryness that do go 3 to 5 years in really bad situations that go 7 to 9. However, since we're seeing this La Nina weaker than last year, odds are that this is probably a three-year cycle that we're in.
Don, thanks so much for taking the time with us and for making your way to Kansas City.
Thanks for having me.
That's Don Day. He's with Day Weather out of Cheyenne, Wyoming, and wraps up this Thursday edition of the Closing Market Report. I'm Todd Gleason.